Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Agile Brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of The Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today, we're going to talk about the value of B2B2C and how to create a win-win situation for all parties involved, despite the challenges and risks associated with B2B2C and self-service models, in a special episode brought to you by the Office of Experience, a design-driven, digital-first, vertically integrated, and collaborative agency that believes in the power of ideas and the strength of people. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Carlos Manalo, co-CEO and co-founder at the Office of Experience, and Tom Flerel, Chief Commercial Officer at Amla Commerce and Zenode. Carlos and Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Love being here.
Thanks, Greg. Great to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking with you both about this. Why don't we start with you each giving a little background on yourselves as well as what your companies do?
Sure. I'll go. This is Carlos Manalo. I'm one of the co-founders of the Office of Experience. We are a digital consultancy based out of Chicago, operating in North America all over the place. And we believe that better experiences equals better business. We've been around for over 10 years now, and we specialize a lot in B2B, lots of e-com, lots of marketing. I've been doing this for over 25 years. And I grew up in e-commerce, user experience, and digital transformation. And I'm just excited to be here. Tom?
Yeah, nice to meet everyone. I'm Tom Flerel. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Amla Commerce. We are a software company, and we have two different platforms, basically e-commerce platforms. One is called Zenode, which is an enterprise B2B e-commerce platform. And the other platform is called Artify. And Artify basically allows for product customization to occur real time in a shopping cart experience. And similar to Carlos, I've been in e-commerce for about 20 years and really grew up more in the digital agency space.
Great. So let's get started here. And we're going to start with some definitions just to make sure everybody's on the same page here. So, you know, we've got a lot of senior marketers out there listening to this. So surely, you know, everybody knows what B2B and B2C mean. But what exactly is B2B2C? And, you know, why is it important to understand this?
I can jump in on that one. And I'll talk more at like a business model perspective. So from my experience, there's two ways to look at B2B2C, or some people call it B2B2X, if the third B is a business. It could also mean customer. But basically, it, from my perspective, it's really about channel enablement. And that means that the first B could be a manufacturer supplier who traditionally is enabling a channel, which is the middle B. And that channel could be a customer. It could actually be a distributor. There's all kinds of different ways or different models where that middle B, you know, has, it could be a different entity. And then the final purchaser is the final C. So a good example of that is, and I'm going to use an e-commerce category or category of business, is uniform manufacturers and suppliers. Typically, a uniform distributor will stand up a unique store on behalf of a customer who has their own unique program. And then the actual buyer, the third B or C in B2B to C, is actually the employee, or if it's school uniforms, it could actually be a student. So that's one version of B2B to C. The other version is almost every manufacturer by default has a B2B to C business model where the manufacturer works with distributor networks, and those distributor networks supply products to customers. The traditional model is somewhat disparate, where the manufacturer may not have close relationships with the end customer because the distributor is in the middle, and the distributor takes on a lot of the burden of warehousing merchandise or taking inventory, maybe improving the product information, if not managing more of it, and they own the customer relationship. In a B2B to C model, ideally, it's more of a partnership where the manufacturer perhaps has a single pane of glass or a portal where their sales reps can log in. They can manage jobs and quotes for distributors. Distributors can log into that single pane of glass and they can request quotes. They can manage jobs and orders. And if they're bidding on projects together, that NC, the customer, could log into the same portal and actually look at ship times, choose shipping options, have a lot more control over the buying experience. And in that entire partnership, there's a lot more self-serve, a lot more control, and a lot of more operational efficiency than in the traditional disparate model.
Wow, that's a lot of heavy constructs there. I mean, for me, from a UX experience or UX standpoint, I'll try to boil it down. Manufacturers, an easy way to engage in building a halo and developing hopefully a direct channel to your distributors and then the end customers. For distributors, retailers, marketplaces, as Tom was beginning to allude to, it's a way for companies to extend, you know, something called infinite aisles or sell more stuff, right, with minimal risk. And then for the consumer, this is the C part, it's a way to engage with these brands directly with better pricing, better access, better promotions and specials because it's more personalized. So everything Tom said was absolutely spot on. But I think from a user experience side, you know, you look at that, it's a more seamless way of getting consumers to work with the value chain of manufacturing, distribution, and then getting the item in your house or in your door. Yeah. So to me, it's a win-win-win.
Yeah. So, you know, we're probably familiar with some of the challenges with B2B or B2C. What are some of the inherent challenges and risks with this B2B to C model?
You know, I'll start with that. I think that it can feel inordinately complex. It requires a lot of figuring out the systems across the two organizations, right? B2B and then to C. And then around all of that, having done this a couple of times, you kind of have to really figure out, because there's going to be a lot more personalization lining up in these buying portals that consumers will never be exposed to. It's just something that happens organically for them. On the manufacturing distribution side, you're going to have to be more mindful about the variations of merchandising content and then lining up the strategic focus of customer-specific pricing, ship availability, pick, pack, drop ship, so on and so forth. There's a ton of permutations against that. So it can be inordinately complex would be the biggest risk that I would say. Tom, what about you?
Yeah, my perspective, I'm going to come at it from a technology perspective, but it really is going to circle back around to a UX or CX perspective, which is whether it's a single pane of glass where distributors log in, or whether it's allowing a distributor to stand up their own store or allowing a channel to stand up their own web store to sell to that end customer, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the complexity really is about making sure that it's very easy, very seamless. Mm-hmm. If it's a single pane of glass, it's easy for the distributor to request quotes, manage projects, whatever the capabilities are, the requirements are that they need. Same thing if they need to stand up their own store. It has to be really super easy and seamless, because you have to assume that a lot of these models are for distributors and channels that may not have a lot of digital capabilities. So it's, you have all the complexities that Carlos just talked about, but then the other big complexity is just making it so simple to manage it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, Carlos, you mentioned looking for the win-win-win. So, you know, curious how, you know, how does an organization turn some of these challenges into opportunities and get that win-win-win?
Well, I was talking to this guy who was basically saying that priority is action. And that
I might know him.
That's a plug for Greg for the audience, by the way.
Thank you.
That was his latest piece of IP that's out there. I fully believe in that, for real. So how do you get there? Well, first you got to demystify this whole theater of complexity, especially when you're looking at it from a program management standpoint, and debunk it, make it simple. And the way to do that is do what you're doing, listen to the podcast, do your research, and then find the right strategic partners who can help you along the way, a Sherpa, so to speak. And then what you got to do is you got to then simplify all of the people, processes, and systems so you have a shot at, what was it, Greg? Priority is action.
Carlos gets a commission on all books sold, by the way. So it's a.
And then my final recommendation is that de-risk this. Set up pilots, and then figure out what works, what doesn't, and grow iteratively using continuous improvement. Tom, what about you?
Yeah, in my experience so far, this is somewhat of a new path for many companies, because a lot of companies, suppliers and manufacturers, don't think this exists because they haven't seen the technology in many cases, or they aren't thinking about how technology can enable channels at this level. So part of it is just, you know, I guess thinking more futuristically about this, or having this as part of a digital transformation plan. And to me, and it goes back to what Carlos just said about, you know, basically setting up MVPs, growing iteratively, etc., having the technology to do this, but then also being, the technology has to be flexible enough to iterate as well.
If you're like me, it's hard to keep up with all the trends, fads, and critical concepts that marketing and CX leaders need to know about. To help, I've partnered with some of the world's most notable MarTech thought leaders to create the Agile Brand Guides book series. These are short reads, 3 hours or less, on important topics like generative AI, customer data platforms, MarTech infrastructure evaluation, and more. They're available in print, digital, and audio formats, and quickly get you up to speed on critical topics that leaders and aspiring leaders need to understand. Search for Agile Brand Guides on Amazon, or go to the Agile Brand Guide website at www.agilebrandguide.com. That's agilebrandguide.com for more. Before we get back to the show, I just wanted to remind you to hit the follow or subscribe button on your app to make sure you get notified when new episodes of this show are available. Now let's get back to the show.
So let's, I want to dive a little deeper in here and touch on some things that we've already talked about, but look at, you know, how do we improve not only the model of B2B to C, but also there's a few customers in there, you know, in a B2B model or a B2C model, there's a customer perhaps, but there's a lot of customers that we're talking about here. So, you know, first off, what role can a storefront play in this B2B to C model?
You know, storefront is a loaded word, Greg. You know, we wouldn't be here if we didn't believe that this was a huge opportunity for anybody exploring it. I grew up in, you know, MRO, maintenance, repair, and operations, B2B e-commerce. And something like this can be huge and better than Amazon for a lot of these manufacturers. we believe that the interface is the brand, and this is how you bring it to life. And really, the opportunity here is if you set up a B2B to C or B2B to X portal, it can become an e-commerce destination for a lot of these types of customers, where it becomes part of their habit. So if you become habituated against this, and it's easier than dealing with, you know, a traditional buying marketplace, I think that's where the storefront play manifests. But it has to feel very exclusive, personalized, and have unique propositions for the customers. Otherwise, why would they come to the portal? So there is a but there. What about you, Tom?
I'm going to come at it from a different angle, because we're talking a lot about the sales aspect of e-commerce and the revenue aspect, which is real. I think there's a whole operational efficiency aspect here too. When we talk about the ability for that middle B or the channel to actually stand up their own store and operate it, that means that the master B, the distributor supplier, doesn't need to add FTEs to take new orders or to manage that channel. They don't have to add FTEs to create stores on behalf of their channels if that's part of their go-to-market strategy. And I think the ROI goes even deeper, whether it's that or a single pane of glass where all parties can log in and have a similar experience. You're talking about, in traditional manufacturing at least, these were jobs that were basically filled by inside sales reps, call centers, people punching orders into ERPs.
Right.
Now you have the end customer punching orders into a store or into a portal, or working with a channel that goes into a portal that goes directly into the ERP. The ROI in this B2B to X, B2B to C model is significant, because those types of jobs, the inside sales reps jobs, one, are take a lot of training. They're hard to recruit to, difficult people to replace. But as the workforce continues to age and these people retire, rather than replace them, which is very expensive, why not automate some of those operations?
Yeah. And that kind of leads to the next thing, which is self-service. You know, B2C, I think a little bit ahead of B2B in this, as far as offering self-service tools and things, but B2B is certainly moving in this direction. I'm seeing a lot of that and hearing a lot about that as well. You know, kind of building on what you were just talking about, you know, how does self-service play a role in this B2B2C?
I'll take that. I mean, we know of this one platform that can do this really, really well. And to me, I always look for three things in these types of technology platforms. Because we live in the age of hyper quantification, automated insights are a given, right? So attribution, tagging, and analytics. That's a huge benefit for this. What does that do? It gives you a better potential at optimizing the experiences. So your conversion rate, your engagement rate will increase because you have so much data available where you can start to optimize it. And then finally, on the qualitative side, if you play your cards right with this type of buying portal, CSAT or NPS or satisfaction scores will increase for both the retailers and distributors, given that this can feel very, very turnkey. That, and for consumers, right, or the final C or X, as Tom was talking about, will feel like it's personalized, it's catered to them, and it's something that they can't get anywhere else on top of being very, very turnkey. So there's very few platforms that I've seen that can deliver on that, like the platform that Tom represents, which is something called Znode, and we're actually working on an implementation together. So I can speak very strongly about it.
Great. So let's talk a little bit more. I know you touched on some of the benefits already and just kind of talking about a platform that does it well. But, you know, what at a high level, or even, you know, in detail, what are some of the benefits to be gained from a move to self-service?
Tom, why do you start on that?
I'll start. I'm going to go back to the operational efficiencies. We have a manufacturer running our platform, Znode. They do have a single pane of glass portal. They sell through distributors. the distributors bid on large projects. It's in the building supply industry. So they actually had their ROI in the entire project was recovered in under 1 year from two different things. One was the efficiencies of not having to continue to hire FTEs, because a lot of those jobs, which were, again, I go back to that story of people punching orders into an ERP, were no longer needed. Those resources were used elsewhere in the business. And then two other efficiencies when I talked about flexibility of the platform. So Zeno, the platform is API first and connects to third-party systems very easily. But where they saw a big gain was actually in shipping efficiencies. So they connected to a shipping software that gave them accurate shipping. Prior to that, the ability to get real-time accurate calls for shipping didn't exist. So they were estimating shipping and they would lose money on some orders and make money on others. It also allowed the customer to choose what the shipping method was based upon time frame and cost. And so between saving money on shipping and not having to hire additional FTEs, they actually recovered 100% of their investment in the project in the first year. So I'm going straight for operational efficiencies without even touching the whole sales aspect and everything that comes with the ability to sell online or sell through distributors to the end customer.
Yeah, I'll build on that, right? I'm a lot more familiar with that aspect of it. At minimum, this is what they call a product line extension strategy, right? You get to sell more stuff to people that need it, and you can do it in a direct way without all the corporate speak. And then the other aspect of that, and Greg, you and I have talked about this in the past, if you play your cards right, you have the ability to activate for these types of organizations something that they call an infinite aisle strategy. Mm. And what does that mean? Right, so if distributor A is selling 1,000 SKUs, all of a sudden, because you add in this component of B2B to C, you can now dovetail in another 1,000 or yet another 1,000 or the equivalent of 5,000 additional SKUs if you converge all of these things into a marketplace like this. I'll make that real for everybody. It's what's happening on Amazon every day, right? Yeah. The best example, the largest example of a B2B to C marketplace is Amazon. So that is the highest threshold or highest aspect of the continuum from a B2B to C standpoint, infinite aisles. So what Tom and I are talking about is somewhere in the middle, product line extension to the left, infinite aisle to the right.
The other thing I would jump in, just following up on what Carlos just commented on, is channel loyalty. So one example of this is we work with a very large global supplier in the promotional products category. And in that category, the majority of orders for any supplier come from smaller distributors. There aren't major distributors that make up 30, 40% of any supplier's business. So many of those smaller distributors traditionally had stood up their own templated stores on behalf of the customer that they were serving. It could be an event, it could be for uniforms, it could be for branded apparel. The supplier now has allowed the middle B to stand up their own store using the supplier's technology. They can download a catalog, they can set their own pricing, they can skin that store, and they can publish that store for, again, an event, whatever the case is, a specific customer. By making that process easier and seamless, that supplier now has absolute loyalty from that channel, from those distributors that they didn't have prior to that. Because when those distributors had to stand up their own stores, they would pull products from multiple suppliers through a syndication tool into one store.
Right.
Now it's so much easier and it doesn't cost them anything. So that supplier is getting a lot more sell through. They're becoming the exclusive supplier of these unique stores. And they have great loyalty from their distributors.
That's right.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Carlos and Tom, thanks so much for joining the show. One last question before we wrap up here. You've both given a lot of great insights, a lot of great advice already. What's one next best action you each recommend for those listening who want to improve that B2B2C experience?
You know, if you're listening to this podcast, that means you're already started the journey. So you're doing the research. Look for the right partners. It could be, you know, people who have done it before. It could be agencies and consultancies like the Office of Experience. And again, what I would say there is set up a strategy that sets up the potential of the program while being mindful of the risk, and always line up your ROI on a 1 to 3 year continuum. There's no way you can lose.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I'm going to come at it more from a technology perspective again, and a little bit of an operational perspective, but choose a technology that is built from day one to allow for B2B to C programs to be managed in an e-commerce environment. And I think you have to choose the right partner to help you select that technology, as Carlos was alluding to, and who can be your Sherpa and guide you on that trip. But we do hear a lot of companies that have this concept and wanting to do B2B to C. They choose a platform and they find out that in order to make that platform work, it's a seven-figure investment in 3 years versus choosing the right technology from day one and being able to get to market faster, you know, less technical debt, less overhead, and actually start to generate revenue and show ROI much faster.
Yeah, great stuff. Again, I'd like to thank Carlos Manalo, co-CEO and co-founder at the Office of Experience, and Tom Fleerl, Chief Commercial Officer at Amla Commerce and Znode, for joining the show. You can learn more about Carlos and Tom and their companies by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GregKilstrom.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides, covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kilstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile Brand.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save